Welcome to another episode of Table Setters covering all things Major League Baseball. As always, I'm Steve, joined by my tag team partner, Devin. What's going on, dude?
Nothing much, man. Let's talk some baseball. Ready to go.
Love it, man. You guys can find us on the pod here at Table Setters on IG, also at Table Setters Pod on the Twitter machine. Make sure you guys check us out, interact with us. We just jumped above 100 followers on both of the platforms, some conversation going. So slowly but surely building up a little bit of the following, the conversation, especially as we approach Memorial Day, which is the unofficial mark of who's real and who's a pretend contender. We're approaching that, and feels like, you know, same thing on our podcast. People are starting to catch on what we're talking about here.
Yeah, we got some comments on there this week. I feel like more so than any other week. Some people disagreeing with things I said, or, you know, no big arguments. And then people say some crazy things too. Like, some people are very reasonable and just a little friendly back and forth, respecting what we say. And then others, man, they're, again, no disrespect to anyone so far. It's been all pleasant, but some of the ideas people come up with are out of left field. And maybe we'll mention a few of those during this podcast.
Well, if it wasn't for the take that made our Just a Bit Outside, the take I saw on Twitter with the Pete Alonso trade proposal from a presumed Met fan. I believe it was a Met fan that was proposing that trade. A little wild out there. So these trade proposals, guys, you have to remember, it's May 7th. Like, let's pump the brakes a little bit with all this exaggerated, you know, these emergency break glass situations. Like, it's May 7th. Let's relax, everybody.
Yeah, people get annoyed. People get upset by the team's performance. I mean, especially Met fans, I can say that, and want to just sell these guys off for whatever they can get. We got to remember, not everybody's the Marlins. It's May. It's early. Nobody's going anywhere right now, at least not in New York, not in the Mets, not in the Yankees. Probably only the Marlins are the only team that has a chance of selling more guys before June.
Well, that being said, let's get to our opening say and talk about what is on our mind to start this podcast. All right. Well, this is the perfect transition from episode 7. Here we are in episode 8, talking with the opening say with some deals going down. So, Devin, tell us what's on your mind to start the show.
All right. Well, the thing that caught my eye the most is the Luis Arraez trade. We just mentioned the Marlins. It is very, very rare you see a name like this dealt before June or July, early May. We know the Marlins have gotten off to a really, really bad start after making the playoffs just last year. But to see a guy, you know, batting champion, a guy that they really just dealt for not long ago, and they dealt their ace Pablo Lopez to get him. And now here we sit, you know, not too long after they surprised last year, and he is now a San Diego Padre. And it's like, what's left to watch for the Marlins? You've basically already waved the white flag. On the Padres' end, I mean, listen, we always give them kind of a hard time for, like, you know, what are we doing? You sell Juan Soto off, then you trade for Dylan Cease, then you trade for Luis Arraez. I guess you can reason it a little bit where they just didn't think they'd be able to keep Soto long-term with all that money that he's going to make. So I can respect that, but they still wanted to be aggressive. Listen, man, they have plenty of premier players. I gave them a lot of crap the first night of this trade, but the more I think about it, I like this trade. This is a little different than some of the other deals they've made. You got a guy you can put at the top now with all these other big guys, whether it be Manny Machado or Fernando Tatis, that hopefully can drive this guy in, gets on base a ton. Everyone's saying the closest thing to Tony Gwynn since Tony Gwynn. So I actually like it on the Padres end now. And what made me like it even more, and I just read this actually a few hours ago, I didn't hear this at first, it came out that the Marlins are going to pay down most of Arraez's contract this year. So allows the Padres to pay the lefty the league minimum for the remainder of the season. And I guess they'll pick up his contract next year as far as fully paying it. That's pretty incredible. So not only did they get this guy, but they don't have to pay him very much this year either.
Yeah, and the thing is with the Marlins, you mentioned waving the white flag, whatever symbolic way of saying it, they're giving up on this year. And we talked about the trade pieces that they're going to be starting to sell off, like a chop shop. And there's a lot of other pieces out there. We're talking about the Jazz Chisholms. You keep hearing that name pop up. And for them to be selling this early shows that they had no intention on competing this year at all. And for this piece to be sold off here, especially when you don't want to build the leverage for potential contenders in the, you know, in the seller's market that becomes sort of this tight race during the trade deadline, they could have waited till July, but it feels like their intention this year is just to look towards, not even towards 2025. It feels like they're looking towards like 2028 at this point. I'm sorry, Fish fans out there, but it feels like the Marlins are not intending on competing in the immediate unless something crazy happens in the next few years. They are really breaking it all down to build a new core and figure out what's going on there. And, you know, that's sad to see, especially with these fans that, you know, probably have been used to, as we've seen in the past, they build up franchise players and then watch them go off elsewhere. And this is the same old stuff here. But, you know, as we said, that core that originally was out there was the, and I think you posted on our story today with the Christian Yelich trade, you know, things like that. When you start to look through the lens of, all right, what did we actually get back when you trade some of these superstars? And you see where these guys are. I believe one guy's coaching high school baseball. I mean, it's pretty alarming, especially where these deals are supposed to be what you're cementing and building future foundations of teams on. And it's just not there. So you have to start questioning the leadership in Miami and figure out, what are we doing? Because the Padres are a different story. I like this deal for them as well. He, you know, Arias adds a lot to their lineup. He gets on base, doesn't strike out. They definitely need that. But as far as it making sense in the grand scheme of things about what it means for both teams, it's confusing because what does it do for the Marlins if they're paying off most of the salary? Mm-hmm. Was the return worth it in the end? And again, building up leverage towards July, would have been better off to wait and then shell it off all in July and then build up the numbers? Or maybe they were thinking Arias was going to fall off. I don't know, man, but selling them off this early, especially with a fan base that already wasn't showing up, there's not much to go to the ballpark for.
Well, credit to you, because just last week on episode 7, you know, you proposed the question on the buy or sell of, you know, the Marlins having the best trade piece. And I'll be honest, when you put that in the show outline earlier that day, I was kind of like, wow, we're going to talk about trade, like teams trading already? It seems kind of early. Like, it's still fun to talk about, but it's kind of early. And a few days later, Arias is shipped off. So you had the timing literally perfect. And then the thing you mentioned that I posted to the story, this is crazy. The Christian Yelich deal. And this just shows you why it's like, you know, there's no guarantees these prospects are going to work out as much as you might like them. The Christian Yelich deal, they got Lewis Brinson. He's currently playing in the Mexican League. I think he was really supposed to be the premier guy and just never turned out. I think it's Isan Diaz playing with Lancaster Barnstormers of the Atlantic League. I remember him. He was supposed to be pretty good too.
Go Monty Ducks, Harrison, baby.
Yeah, Monty Harrison playing college football. playing college football. That doesn't even make sense to me. I guess he's super young. Anyway, Jordan Yamamoto, the other Yamamoto, head baseball coach at Dwyer High School. Those are the guys they got back for Christian Yelich. Like, that's brutal, man. And here's what I'll say, man. So I saw Ken Rosenthal always does a great job of like putting these things in perspective. So on Foul Territory, he was talking about, listen, the Marlins after last year had a decision to make. They overachieved. All the advanced statistics basically showed that they were probably pretty lucky, almost to the point of like 9 extra wins lucky. So they could look at that and say, all right, like this is all luck. Like, let's, you know, stay the path and do what we need to do for the future. Or they could say, hey, let's ride this wave and, you know, ride the momentum and see where it takes us. Like, let's be a little aggressive. And obviously we see the decision they made. And he finished by saying, listen, you also, like Major League Baseball teams, I think what he said was you can walk and chew gum at the same time. Like, you could do a little bit of both. You could thread the needle. You can still look towards the future and not just completely immediately give up here. I don't know. How can you be a Marlin fan? Every time they have something interesting, it's torn down immediately, no matter who is in charge. Like, that's, we're going to get to this now, a few clips of their, you know, general manager, I guess, their front office guy, Peter Bendix, who came from the Rays. So, I mean, I guess he's well-respected being from that front office, but we saw a couple interesting clips we're going to play of what he said maybe a week or two, I think it was, before the trade, and then obviously right after the trade.
Yeah, and before we get to that, you mentioned breaking it down, and that the way baseball rebuilds now is so different. Like, in the past, we've had all these teams breaking it down. It was obvious that they were, you know, dead on their feet from the beginning of the year. And we watched teams rebuild in the immediate. I mean, the Yankees, again, big market team, but they pretty much rebuilt on the fly. And again, you have to do that. But I think really what is the issue in Miami is no one's holding them accountable. What kind of, in that market, what's really the pressure if they're non-competitive? If they're They're not showing up to the ballpark anyway. They're not getting on the sports radio and yelling about the Marlins. It's about the Heat. It's about college yeah. football. It's not really, and it's about the Dolphins. You know what I mean? They're not talking about the Marlins in that town. And this is a franchise with two World Series rings under their belt. You know what I mean? This is not a franchise crazy. That hasn't seen success. 97 and 03. It wasn't that long ago. And we've seen pretty good teams here and pretty good players come in and out. You know, even recently, this team is, you know, that team we were talking about with the Yelich team, that core, pretty damn good. And not saying that they could have won a ring, but we've seen weirder things happen in October where a team like that gets hot with the right pitching and figuring it out. A team like that could have walked away with a championship as well. That kind of stuff happens, but you didn't give yourself a chance because you just broke it down completely every single time.
Not to mention, they break it down when they're already young. Like Yelich, Ozuna, and Stanton, before they shipped all three of them off, they were young, like young, more athletic versions of their current selves. And this one too, like, okay, you're going to sell and kind of start over. What's the average age of their team right now? Like, I should have looked that up before we started recording. I'd love to know. Like, here we are. We're sitting here talking about maybe Jazz Chisholm's next. Jazz Chisholm's been in the league for what, 3 years? Like, it's just, it's insane. Like, this is not like this, oh, our, you know, we've gotten old and these guys are starting to break down and our minor league system isn't very good. Like, that's not necessarily the case. It's just like they restart just to restart. It's a shame. But I guess let's play the clips of Bendick so we can see, you know, how he sounded before and after this deal.
All right, so there's two clips here. I'm going to play the longer one first, and you guys will hear what he says. We'll respond to it. Then we'll play that second one, which is about 30 seconds as well.
We got an offer that we felt like we couldn't walk past for the long-term benefit of the organization. The team's record is what it is right now. We're very disappointed. I know the players are very disappointed. Everybody here is very disappointed about that, but it is also something that we can't change right now. And when we got this offer on Luis for a tremendous amount of young talent that we really think is going to be very helpful for us long-term, it was just something we couldn't walk past. It was the type of deal that we were worried wasn't going to be there if we waited, and we decided to pull the trigger on it now. It's part of the calculation of the value of the player for the rest of the season when, unfortunately, our record is what it is. And the fact is that, you know, we're unlikely to make the playoffs this year, and trading that for future value seems like the right thing for this organization right now. The difficulty of a trade like this is magnified when it happens so early in the season. And Luis is such a great baseball player, but he's an even better human, teammate, person in the clubhouse. All of those things just serve to make this an even more difficult deal. The message is to continue to work hard, and there's a lot of baseball left. And that is something that is felt inside this clubhouse. There's a bunch of professionals here. The players, the staff, everybody involved with this organization, they're tremendous professionals. They're going to work as hard as they can to put the players in position to succeed. Players are going to work as hard as they can to win games. Fully expect that we're going to improve our record moving forward. And that's something that's going to be unchanged regardless of this trade. We have one eye on the future, one eye on the present, and our goal remains to build towards long-term sustainable success.
All right, so the one thing he did say there that I give him some credit for, he was as transparent as I've ever heard any executive in a front office be, where maybe they're talking about their record, transparently saying that they're a bad team. I agree, but it is refreshing to hear, like, I guess, mirror, because I think just the intention on his part of telling people how it is. And again, if this was New York, I don't think he could be as honest because of the pressure. I don't think the media pressure is there. So this guy's talking out to the echo chamber of baseball where everybody gets it. They're non-competitive. They're not making the playoffs. But again, we're essentially 35 days into the season. So in one breath, you're saying there's a lot of baseball left. There's a lot of professionals here. We're going to compete. But you're trading off essentially your best player, your second best player on that roster. And you're telling everyone, keep your head up. There's a lot of baseball to be left played. So it is a weird message to be sending to not only the Miami fans, if they're out there, but the Miami ball club.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't think I've ever seen a guy in his position or anything similar say on May, whatever that was, 5th or 6th or 4th, whenever that trade actually went down, that early, just straight up say publicly, like, we're probably not making the playoffs. Even if it's true, like, just to hear a guy in his position just spit that out was jarring. I guess, to a degree refreshing, but just kind of crazy. And, you know, listen, I if he took that deal that early instead of like waiting closer to the deadline, I believe him when he says like that they really like the package. And I absolutely could see the Padres being very aggressive because they did the same thing for Cease when they kind of came out of nowhere and no one thought he was going there. So I get that. But the thing that frustrates me is what he sounded like just a few, like a week or two before the trade. And that, I think, is the next clip we're going to play, which is pretty short. But this one, so it's a little out of order, which is not a big deal. But you're going to hear the difference of what he sounded like before the deal.
Moves that you made in the offseason thus far, the players you brought in, your evaluation on those?
I can confidently say that it's too early to have a strong evaluation. I think that we've seen some positive things with guys like Calvin Poche. We've seen some players that I'm confident are going to improve based on what they've done so far. But at the end of the day, we have to remember it is not even May yet. And the worst thing that you can do is evaluate players too soon and come to the wrong conclusion.
Do you feel that?
Okay. So, yeah, those are two opposite perspectives. And again, I guess things change if you get offered a bounty full of prospects or whatever you're looking for to stock the cupboards, as they say. But I still believe with other contenders out there looking for a player that does not, you know, he doesn't grow on trees. This array, you know, Reyes is a player that is pretty rare in baseball nowadays with the non-strikeout numbers, making contact. He's pretty versatile in his own right. You would have had, I wouldn't say a bidding war, but you at least have four or five teams that are in there looking for a player like that, where you'd have to get a better package than you get on May 5th. You have to.
You would think so. I don't know. It's just hard. It's a bitter pill for me, for any baseball fan to swallow when you hear him say in one breath, like, oh, it's far too early in the season really to evaluate anything, like any success or failure. And then a couple weeks later, they're like, well, you know, we're not making the playoffs and we got a really good offer. So, I mean, I hope Arias tears it up in San Diego. The Marlins, I just feel bad for their fans, but also some of those young players there that are kind of left to think like, all right, what now? And don't get me wrong, like a lot of things went wrong for them, which maybe the writing was on the wall. Maybe he's seeing this right, but this is neither here nor there, but like he doesn't come off as a very likable dude. Like as far as the average baseball fan watching that, I think a lot of them are probably a little queasy watching it. Just, I don't know. He just comes off as a guy that took like a statistics course in college and then interned for the Rays and suddenly is a GM and like never played a game of baseball in his life. I know I'm kind of like, you know, stretching that a little bit. We don't know anything else about him. So like, I'm going to give you that. I am creating a story about this guy that is not necessarily true, but I'm just saying that's the way he comes off to me, which I think as like, I could just imagine an older baseball scout kind of guy watching that clip and being like, what the hell happened?
Like what happened? Like the scene in Moneyball where everyone's arguing about the way things are being built in. Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's a certain level of, you know, I guess finesse you have to have with the media. And like, there's just been this quiet part that's never spoken out loud. Everybody, if you're following baseball, you know, the Marlins are not making the playoffs. You know that they are a long shot to even be competitive in many of the games they're in. But at the same time, like, do you want to say that out loud? And maybe it's refreshing in a lot of ways because it's honesty. It's not doing the very stock canned answers we get from a lot of the executives, the Brian Cashmans of the world. Even Brian Cashman's been a little bit more candid in his interviews, but very, you know, keeping everything close to the chest. And it is refreshing in a lot of ways, but it is jarring, like you said, because this is not, he doesn't seem like a typical baseball guy. You know what I mean? This is more of a guy, like you said, a statistician. He's a guy who probably just crunches numbers and takes away the personal feel. And whether that works or not, the proof will be in the assessment. And I don't know what the window looks like, 4 years or so. If they're non-competitive, okay, this didn't work.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. And I don't know, maybe they'll build it up a little bit and tear it down again. That's kind of the expectation with the Marlins.
So as far as what's on my mind that caught my eye originally, Jose Ramirez. And I don't think Jose Ramirez, the player, gets as much love as he deserves. We're looking at a first-place Cleveland Guardians team. And I want to just talk about the history he made earlier this week on Monday. And he hit a solo home run in the sixth inning of Monday's day game against the Tigers. And this home run was his 87th go-ahead home run for the franchise, breaking Larry Doby's record from the 1950s. So it's worth mentioning that Doby was the second player to break baseball's color barrier and the first to do so in the American League. So Jose Ramirez is doing important things. He continues to break outside of that one down season he has, which everyone seems to reference. Jose Ramirez has been, I mean, a Hall of Fame caliber player. We're watching greatness in real time. And I don't know why people don't talk about Jose Ramirez in the same breath as the greatest players in the game, but they should. And the Guardians are trumping any of the expectations that people had that were a little bit underwhelming, they are going out there and they're looking like they're a very competitive team that's going to be a tough out come October.
Yeah, no doubt. The most publicity he got was when he knocked out Tim Anderson.
Yes.
But you know what? I like this stat. There's so many stats out there that are just kind of useless. But when you tell me this guy has this amount of go-ahead home runs, like that's a meaningful statistic to me, like just a clutch player. And like I look at years ago when their World Series run against the Cubs and those things, and everyone thought Francisco Lindor was the guy. And maybe he was, I don't know, but Ramirez was kind of thought of as like the 1B, like his tag team, like the Marty Jannetty tag team partner. There's your wrestling reference for the night. And like Lindor is the guy. And I'm not saying, you know, we could talk about Lindor's time with the Mets. We've already have. But Ramirez, I think, is proven, man. He's the heartbeat of that team. And maybe he always was just kind of a quiet guy who just goes out there and plays and does his job and does it really, really exceptionally well. It's also like he doesn't have the look necessarily of a superstar. You don't look at him and like, man, this guy's a monster. But you watch him and you're like, this guy's a monster. So I think it's a little bit of all of that.
Yeah, and I think the Cleveland team needs to start to be recognized, and people are sleeping on them outside of if you are following baseball closely or you live in the Ohio greater area. People are not really referencing. I know the Cavs are making a playoff run right now. They're probably going to get bounced out by the Celtics. But nevertheless, when people start to wake up out of their basketball haze, they're going to wake up to a Cleveland team that's been pretty damn good to start the year. And Jose Ramirez is leading the charge. And I think, again, historically, if you look at it and you take away, and I know it's hard to take away that one season that he had a really bad season, this guy has been on a historic pace upwards of any, you put him against any player to start their career. He has been that good. And I like that stat too. When it popped up on my timeline, you know, go ahead home runs like that. That's different than garbage time home runs. We see people padding stats and yep, all that. 87th go ahead home run. It means he comes up in the big moment.
Yeah. He's perfect for that team. Perfect for that city. They just kind of quietly figure out how to get it done from year to year. And, it's fun to watch. And like you said, I do. They're going to be tough. They're going to be a tough team to play if they keep this up and stay healthy.
With that being said, let's get to the meat of the order and talk about all the other news in Major League Baseball. All right. So we have pretty much a full slate of games here on Tuesday as we're recording. So, we'll, of course, we'll talk about some of those, as we mentioned throughout, because like we were talking about before we went on air, a lot of the happenings tonight change really the narrative of what we're talking about tonight, because there's so much that happened in baseball that we had to shift our stories, because it just shows how quickly things can turn on a dime with the baseball stories here. I mean, one night changes everything.
Yeah, we had to change some of the topics, or like add some notes or switch some things. And, you know, some things we thought we were going to be a little negative on, and now suddenly it has more of a positive spin, or vice versa. So yeah, you gotta roll with the punches here.
So we're going to start here with the Dodgers, and of course, they swept the Braves, and they continue to roll against the Marlins, the beleaguered Marlins. But the story coming out of Los Angeles is Walker Buehler, and Walker Buehler made his return last night. Got mixed results in his return. He's a guy who everyone's been waiting to come back from his injury, and he has been, you know, a guy they've been waiting for, adding riches upon riches to a Dodgers team that's already loaded with talent. This dude is a certified ace. We know we've seen him pitch in big moments. Your thoughts on seeing Walker pitch? We're going to hear, we have a clip from Max Muncy. He appeared on a podcast earlier today talking about Muncy and what he thought of him. But your thoughts on just Buehler and what we saw from him in the early jump from his first start last night?
Listen, man, they roughed him up a little bit in the first couple innings there. I think that's kind of to be expected. A lot of aces anyway, like guys of his stature, like you either get to them in the beginning of the game, or you don't get to them at all because they tend to settle in. I mean, you can say that for this one because he's been out for a super long time. So give him some time to see if he looks like the old Walker Buehler. I'm confident in the guy. The coolest thing for him is like, he doesn't need to be the Walker Buehler we all remember right away, because he's on the Los Angeles Dodgers, a team that has plenty of riches and plenty of ways to win. But yeah, at first it was like, when you watch the beginning of the start, you're like, I don't know this. I'm not sure if this guy is the same guy, but it's too early to tell. It's going to take a little time to shake off the rust. You know, the rehab assignments and spring training or workouts and all that stuff, like, it doesn't mean anything until the lights are on in a major league stadium and you get a few starts under your belt. So I think he's gonna be fine. I think he's a free agent at the end of the year. I'm not 100% sure, but I think he is. So this is a super meaningful year for him, obviously, to prove his health and also to prove he's still the same guy.
So we're going to hear from Max Muncy, of course, who was in the lineup yesterday on the defensive side for Walker Buehler, and he appeared on a podcast and gave his thoughts from the perspective of his teammate.
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, after he got through the first couple innings, a little rust, hasn't pitched in, you know, almost 2 years. It was kind of looked like the Walker of old. Stuff was coming out good. It was electric, and it's just fun to have him back out there. You know, he's such a competitor, and you know what you're going to get every time he goes out. Even if he doesn't have his best stuff, he's going to compete out there. And you know, it's very fiery, and it's fun to be behind.
Is it weird that it took this long? Not that, you know, Tommy John surgery is, you know, there's a timeline set out, but there was talk, and I think there was rehab assignments last year for him. So you guys were kind of anticipating maybe he comes back last year, and now we're even 7 months past that time. Is that kind of weird?
Yeah, you know, I think we were all expecting him back in September, and obviously things happened that didn't allow that. You know, it seemed like every pitcher we had got hurt last year. So it kind of just felt like it was part of it, but you know, I know it was a long road for him. It was a long road for us waiting for him to come back, but it's, you know, it's finally here, and it's exciting.
So translation from Max Muncy, and I'm sure among other baseball fans, is kind of what you said. We're happy to have him back. We feel like he's going to piece it together, and it's going to take time for him to sort things out. He's going to go through it, and we know he's competitive even in those times, as Muncy said, when he doesn't have it. And it seemed like the beginning of that outing, he didn't have it. And the worrisome thing was the lack of velocity, that which picked up at the end of the game, but he's still not where he was. And of course, it's going to take time to build that up. But where this dude was topping out at high 90s, he wasn't quite there yet. And that had to be alarming for people, because if you can't mix it up and you're not blowing it past people and you don't have the velocity, it changes the way you throw the ball. And I mean, we've seen guys adapt, but you know, coming off of Tommy John, you never really know, because until you pick up a ball in a big league game.
Yeah, I mean, give him a couple games and see where the velocity is. I mean, even Edwin Diaz, who's, you know, a flamethrower, his injury was a leg injury, wasn't even an arm injury, and his velocity has been down so far this year. It's starting to get back up to where we used to see it. But, yeah, I mean, I thought it was interesting. They talked about how, like, they thought they might get him back last year, and then suddenly that didn't happen. I mean, similar thing happened with John Means on Baltimore last year. He did come back and was actually really good. And then all of a sudden was starting to feel not so great, and they shut him down, and he didn't even start with the team this year. So they got to be careful with these pitchers. Shout out to John Means too, by the way, made his first start back. Doesn't have the stature or the name of Walker Buehler, but went seven, I think, shutout innings in his first start. That's big for the Orioles. But the Dodgers, man, if Walker Buehler's Walker Buehler, like, Jesus, like, just the rich gets richer.
So as far as the Dodgers too, as well, Shohei Ohtani leads MLB in average at 370. He leads in home runs at 11 and slugging percentage 705. And oh yeah, also on base, sitting over 1.139. So
OPS, you know, 1.139.
Oh yeah, his OPS is up there. So
ridiculous number.
He had a great night last night. You know, 2 for 3, 2 RBIs, 2-run shot in the first inning. He's becoming what must see. Like, he's the type of baseball that you have to stop what you're doing and check out his at bats, because that's what we're seeing from Shohei Ohtani. It's pure greatness.
Yeah, like the last time I can remember a guy like that is like Barry Bonds, and they're different players, but like what you said, like where you just want to like break into the game just to watch their at bat. Like, that's what it reminds me of, because you just feel like he's going to do something every at bat. That's, you know, something you haven't seen before. He can do everything. He is locked in. It did not take him very long to get comfortable in a Dodgers uniform, because it helps that you didn't really change cities. Like, you just kind of moved to the other team. Man, they're starting to rev it up. A sweep of the Braves. Like, they made the Braves look like their little brother. Like, I expected that to be a highly competitive series. The first game was, I think it went into extras. Acuña hit a game tying home run late in the game. But overall, the Dodgers just looked like the better team. And like, they're still not fully there. Like, Clayton Kershaw still waiting in the wings, and a few other pieces. Shout out to Andy Páez too. Like, that guy, man, like, they needed something. Like, their outfield really was the only weakness of their team. Like, the outfielders weren't really producing. They call this kid up, and he has just not missed a beat, and has just inserted himself in that lineup as an everyday player, everyday piece. So again, the Dodgers just are so well-rounded, where they have a little bit of everything. They can make a trade, they can make a signing, and they have reserves in the minors that are like ready to come up and contribute to the majors.
Oh yeah, and their lesser known prospects are the ones that people would probably kill for as far as loading their cupboard with them. And you know, Pies came up and he's contributed at the big league level. And this is like the cult heroes that they seem to find in the regular season. So we'll see if they can translate it when it really matters in October. Outside of 2020, haven't seen much of that from them. But that's the story that's going to be all year. It's going to be like, okay, you're doing it now, but can you do it when the lights are bright in October? We shall see. But going with some of the returning from the IL, Justin Steele of the Cubs returned from the IL in a big way, but on a 70-pitch limit. Your thoughts on the Cubs getting their, you know, their ace back, let's just say. And they're being competitive, right? I mean, Shota's probably their ace now, but Justin Steele is trying to resume that throne again.
Huge. I mean, huge to get him back. You think about Imanaga, like you just mentioned. Javier Assad has been, like, pitching to a under 2 ERA, like, shockingly. So now you put Steele. Suddenly, I feel like before the season, people were talking about, like, oh, the Cubs will be fun to watch. They'll be a decent team, but, like, their pitching just isn't good enough. I don't think anyone realized how good Imanaga was going to be. No one ever mentioned Assad. Suddenly, this team is fun. They just promoted their top pitching prospect, Cade Horton, to AAA. So maybe we see him later in the year help out as well. This is starting to look like a playoff team to me.
So we also have the Rays reinstating Josh Lowe, and he got two hits in his return to the lineup. The Rays do not lose in this City Connect jerseys, and they continue that trend tonight, hitting offensively, just another stride with those neon jerseys that they're rocking. So your thoughts on Josh Lowe being back in that lineup, which kind of needs them. You know, we're looking at the Rays. We were talking about their bullpen struggling, but their offense wasn't quite on par. Of course, the best antidote is playing the White Sox, which they did tonight, but scoring five runs. But Josh Lowe is much needed in that lineup.
I mean, the White Sox swept them last time those two teams played. I think the Rays are starting to turn it around, sweeping the Mets, and just kind of all those games they had to, like, pull it out at the end. The Mets led in every single game and let each one get away. So that's the kind of – those are the kind of wins that can kind of turn a season around, kind of grind it out and figure out a way to win. Josh Lowe is a nice piece to get back, man. He had a breakout season last year. He's a guy who can hit 20 to 25 home runs when he's right. He's going to steal lots of bases if he's healthy. So they inserted him right back in the middle of the lineup. I think he was in the three hole his first night back. I think it's big. And if Randy Arozarena can come out of his slumber, he hit the game tying home run against Edwin Diaz the other night. He's been hitting like 130, 140, like just incredibly bad. He can't possibly be that bad all season. So I think lots of good things for the Rays. They've had some guys put up good pitching performances. The bullpen hasn't performed the way they're used to, but they're also a little banged up there. Zach Little or Littell has been a pleasant surprise in the rotation. It always seems like they're able to find somebody that no one's heard of to be a big part of the rotation. So, yeah, I think the Rays are going to get back in the mix in a very, very good division.
So sticking with Cleveland here, Stephen Kwan was officially placed in the IL, and he's expected to miss about 4 weeks. And, you know, again, people are not really talking about Cleveland, and they're definitely not talking about Stephen Kwan, who's been revealing himself over the course of the last few years as being one of the best fielders and players in all of baseball. If you look at the numbers here, you know, we saw him get an acute strain on his left hamstring, which is really damaging to this lineup. The Cleveland lineup has been crushing teams going out there. Kwan right now batting .353, over 145 plate appearances. He's walked as often as he's gone down on strikes 11 times apiece. So he's playing uncharacteristic to his normal defense, elite left field defense, giving Cleveland all he's got out there. He's really, and this is just the sheer numbers here, he's been one of the most valuable players for any team in all of baseball. But the silver lining here for Cleveland is not to panic, of course. They have their top prospect, Kyle Manzardo, as the corresponding move for Kwan's IL spot here. So he'll hold it down, but hopefully Stephen Kwan will be back in time. Because, again, people are not talking about how good these players in Cleveland are, and Kwan has been crushing it. You know, and again, if you look at the numbers, it's like you can't believe he's that good.
Yeah, he kind of defines that team. Like, we talked about Jose Ramirez as the heartbeat, the leader, obviously, the guy in the middle of that lineup, the middle of everything. But when you look at Cleveland, they get it done by doing all the little things, putting the ball in play, trying not to strike out too much, playing good defense, and running the bases and being just annoying on the base paths. That's Stephen Kwan. Like, he is the guy that leads that charge. So to replace a guy like that at the top of the lineup for a significant amount of time is difficult to do. You mentioned Manzardo, who's they got in the deal last year from the Rays, I think, for Savali. Again, a top 50, top maybe 30 prospect in the bigs. was tearing it up in AAA, but he's not the same player as Kwan. Like, they're much different types of players. He's not a speed outfielder guy. So even though he was called up, he's not necessarily replacing Kwan. They'll use him, and I'm sure they'll play him. They're not going to call him up for nothing. But I will say, like, I will be fully sold on the Guardians if they can kind of just weather this storm. I'm not saying they have to play well above 500, but if they can play slightly above 500 ball while they have Kwan out, I will officially think that this is a, you know, maybe a ALCS contender. I'll go that far.
Well, speaking of ALCS of times past, here the Astros, the Yankees, and the Boogie Down Bronx kicking off tonight. And three-game set got off to a riveting start if you're a Yankee fan. Yankees wound up getting the win 10-3 to take the opener, of course. Luis Gil went six strong, striking out five. Did walk four, which was concerning, but the Yankees offense carried the way here. And, of course, the story to start the year was the Yankees sweeping the Astros out the gate. And the Astros really haven't gotten off up the mat since that point. They've been, you know, mirror opposite to the surging Yankees, who sit now at 24-13. A game back from first place in the AL East, and the Astros, I mean, they're knocking on the basement of the AL West here. Mm. It's a very important series for both teams. Let's just say that. I mean, Houston's trying to make up ground, and this is about, I wouldn't say bragging rights, but when you see these two teams match up, especially in the Bronx, this is a different feel. This is a team that I don't think the Yankees will ever get over, and especially this core of guys. There's a lot of guys who were in that 2017 ALCS standing across, they feel like they were robbed. Not only were you robbed of a World Series appearance, but I feel like Aaron Judge feels like he was robbed of an MVP. And they won't say that because they say the right stuff here. And they said it in the moment. Of course, like Cody Bellinger came out for the Dodgers and was talking shit on the Astros. And, you know, Judge and all those guys, Glaber came out and said stuff. But now it's in the past. We're sitting here at this point 7 years ago. Most of that Astro team is long gone. Jose Altuve is still there, of course. But there's something about the uniforms at this point. And I think the Yankees right now, they're going to take some pride in burying this fucking team. And you can tell right now they came out firing.
Well, that's what I was going to say. They have to be drooling. You said they got the Astros season off to a poor start, so they have to feel like they're partially responsible for how the season has gone so far for the Astros. And I mean, you look back at that opening series, maybe I can't think of another opening series that I feel like ended up being that important. I really do feel like it kind of kicked both of those teams' seasons off and had a big effect on where they went from there. I mean, Alex Bregman, Jose Altuve, I think Aaron Judge probably still sees red when he sees those two guys. I really do. I don't think they forget, no matter how long it's been. They have a chance to put their foot on the Astros' throat in this series. Came out and knocked Verlander around. Like, this was the game they had to really focus on. And if they could get this one, they got to be thinking sweep. They have to be thinking sweep at this point. A cool little side note, too, is like you talk about the Yankees' vitriol towards the Astros. Don't forget, Juan Soto was a National when they had that incredible World Series run against the Astros in a fantastic World Series that Juan Soto and the Nationals ended up coming away with. I'll never forget. I think maybe it was Bregman that hit the home run and carried the bat to first base. It was one of the Astros. And then like an inning or two later, Soto hits the home run and he carries the bat to first base as well. Or maybe it was vice versa. I'm getting the order wrong. But a lot of dramatic moments in that series. So I don't think Juan Soto probably thinks too kindly of the Astros either. I feel like there was a lot of drama in that World Series between those teams.
Yeah, and I think, you know, winning does build a lot of enemies. Of course, we're talking about the Astros and burying them right now in May, but it's still so early. But this is a team that, I mean, at this point, they've won six consecutive AL West titles, and mm-hmm. they're looking for, you know, their seventh consecutive trip to the ALCS. Unprecedented success here in the American League from the Astros. So you look at a team like that, sitting right now at 12-23. This is not what you expected, because it's essentially, you know, the team that they've built. Of course, they've made tweaks and changes, of course, the last couple of years, but this is pretty much the same team that's coming back from last year. And, you know, I'm sure the Yankees took a lot of pride going in there and especially beating around Justin Verlander, who's been a thorn in their side in big games.
Yeah, they must. They have to. Quick side note as well, correction from last week as far as the Astros. We had mentioned a few guys that if this turns out being this bad, that they might trade expiring contracts. I think I mentioned Kyle Tucker as an expiring contract. He does have a year of arbitration left, so due to be a free agent in 2025, not at the end of this year. But, I mean, at some point, you got to try to lock that guy up and buy out the arbitration, I would think.
Or you could have a situation on your hands similar to Mookie Betts where, like, the Boston moved on. Exactly. Like, I don't know. If you're not going to sign the guy, and we'll talk about that with another piece for another market, somewhere down the line. You have to make a decision if he's the guy you're building around. And how could you not offensively want it there? But as you look at the way things are, we talk about all this success they've seen, seven straight ALCSs or six straight looking for seven, the six straight AL West crowns. Eventually, and this is hard for Houston fans to swallow, it all comes crumbling down. I mean, we have like the dominance, and I want to bring it up for you, the Atlanta Braves, who dominated for over a decade, just went in there every single, it was, you plug and play, they're going to win the NL East every single year. You know they're going to win close to 100 games, and they're going to the playoffs. Are they going to win the World Series? Probably not, but they're going to go dominate throughout the regular season. That's what it feels like the Astros are doing. But eventually, they're going to be bad, and you have to rebuild it and build it up in the image of what you want it to be.
Yeah, and don't forget, the Astros kind of were the ones that made rebuilding and starting over cool, because they were the ones who really went all out and just tanked for a couple years.
We were at spring training when that team was horrendous.
Yeah, we saw young Carlos Correa and George Springer before they were in the bigs. Just full of prospects, but like they were so bad for a few years. And I think it was Sports Illustrated that a few years before they made it to the World Series, and like they were still bad, they put something out like the 2017 World Series champs, like a prediction that ended up, coming true. So I don't think they would hesitate, if this continues to go poorly, at making some bold moves and shipping off some guys that you just couldn't imagine them shipping off when the season started.
So we also have the new faces in MLB Rookie of the Year poll. So Colton Cowser is leading the AL with 17 first place votes, while Mason Miller wasn't far behind with 14. And going to the NL side of things, Shota Yamanaga has 25 first place votes, and Yamamoto is a distant second with 8 votes. Of course, this is an early sort of projection on what the end of the year looks like, but I feel like some of these names will be here. I mean, Mason Miller and Colton Cowser, you can guarantee they're going to be in the conversation for AL Rookie of the Year. Same thing with NL. I mean, those two front runners right there, you kind of know who the outliers of who's the better rookies coming out. Like, we all know the year that Julio won Rookie of the Year. Like, you knew Julio Rodriguez winning Rookie of the Year. It feels like it's a two-man race on both sides. I mean, of course, you can inject, Jackson Holliday if he comes back into it and figures it out. Like, maybe he can have a renaissance and challenge. But the way Cowser's playing right now, he seems like he's going to be represented for Baltimore in there.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, though, because, like, just a month or month and a half ago, I think even the two of us were kind of saying, like, Wyatt Langford, pretty much chalk, write him in for AL Rookie of the Year. Maybe Evan Carter will be in the mix. And like, they're distant, like third and fourth now in this poll. And obviously, like you said, a lot of time to kind of get their names back in the thick of things. But Cowser's hit the skids a little bit here. He's finally dealing with some adversity. So we'll see how he deals with it. Mason Miller, dude, this guy, we've talked about him a little bit, maybe not enough. What a stud. Like, he comes out and the game is over. Those kind of games, their guys are rare and just so, so fun to watch. Like, just absolute dominant. Good personality, too. I've seen him in a few interviews recently, and he just seems like a good dude. A good head on his shoulders, like humble but confident. I'm rooting for that guy. I could easily see him overtaking everybody for the Rookie of the Year.
And also, I mean, changed the face of Oakland's team this year. They feel like a different team with him coming to the end of the game. They've shortened the game to eight innings, and what a better, I mean, again, you don't want to get ahead of ourselves, and we have a long way to get to Vegas, but what better name and what better face to put behind the Vegas rebrand, bringing a team over with a guy as charismatic as Mason Miller. He's been very polished behind the mic and in a lights out closer. Can't you see the magazine covers in the Vegas jersey? And he's the guy. I mean, we have to get there. I think 2028 is when officially that they're going to be in a Vegas building, or what do we talk about? I mean, they're going to be in Sacramento for at least 2 years. So
yeah, I don't think
2027 in Vegas, but if he keeps it up, man, this could be a superstar level player. And we don't want to get too crazy, but he feels like he's this electric, lightning in a bottle type of player.
Yeah, I just don't think he makes it to Vegas. I don't trust the organization to take him that far. But I don't know. Who knows? And as Shota Imanaga as well, just to talk about him, Yamamoto pitches later tonight. Shota went 7 innings, actually allowed 2 runs, which for him is like a lot. So, but he's been unbelievable.
So moving on here, we have the Phillies announcing that Trey Turner has been placed on the 10-day IL earlier this week due to a left hamstring strain. And we got infielder Cody Clemens coming up from AAA to take Turner's place on the active roster. Paired with that, the Phillies have won 6 straight, 10 straight home games, and they lead the MLB with 25 wins. So give you guys some numbers here on their offense and their pitching. They're sitting here just absolutely blowing teams away. 5th in batting average, 4th in runs, 5th in earned run average, and 6th in whip. Looking at some of the leaders here, losing Trey Turner hurts, but he's not even leading the team in batting average. Alec Boehm sitting at 349 as far as home runs go. Schwarber sitting at 9. 32 RBIs for Alec Boehm right now. I mean, this team is coming out there and taking advantage of Citizens Bank Park in an offensive-friendly ballpark.
Yeah, and we can update those numbers. It's now 7 wins in a row, 11 home wins in a row, and now 26 wins on the season to lead the league. They absolutely dominated the Blue Jays tonight to the score of 10-1. I mean, what is there to say? Like, the numbers kind of speak for themselves. The offense is as good as we kind of thought it could be. Losing Trey Turner is obviously a huge hit. He's playing very, very well this year. But they haven't missed a beat so far, that's for sure. And then the pitching. The pitching is like the we've talked about it a few weeks ago, a few episodes ago, and it's just continued. Zach Wheeler was amazing the other night. Tonight, Christopher Sanchez goes out there and goes 7, 1 run. Like, everyone in that rotation. Spencer Turnbull was amazing, and they had to take him out of the rotation because Taijuan Walker came back. Like, they have a little bit of everything. And I think they're the type of team that can sustain an injury to a guy like Trey Turner, almost Dodger-like. It's interesting, man. Like, if you were to be given a Dodgers-Phillies NLCS right now, like, say it started today when both teams are hot, and you had to make a decision, who's winning that series?
I think it goes 7, but I think I'd pick Philly, especially because you got to play. It depends on who, like, you got to play at least an equal amount of games in Philly, if not 3 or 4, depending on who had home field. But I like Philly at home. They're almost unbeatable right now.
Now, the Phillies obviously have taken a rather significant lead in the NL East all of a sudden over the Braves. Do you see the Braves coming back and mixing it up with them throughout the season, like just being back and forth? Or are you convinced already that this is the Phillies division to win this year?
I mean, the Phillies right now are the team to beat, but I think Atlanta can never be counted out looking at that team. I mean, again, we don't want to use hyperbole to get ahead of ourselves, but this Atlanta team is built to last and built to win, and they're built for a marathon of a season. So I fully trust that this is going to be within, you know, 2 games come September. You know what I mean? I don't believe that any team's going to pull away. Right now they're sitting at 3.5 back, and they have not played their best ball yet of the season. So, and could the Phillies play any better at this point? At this point?
The biggest difference between those two teams so far and the seasons they've experienced are really 2 things. The Phillies have been healthier up until now. Now you got the Trey Turner stuff. And their stars have played more like stars than the Braves' stars. Acuña has not had a Ronald Acuña season. 2 home runs. His average is not very high. Matt Olson has been pretty awful after a humongous season last year. I think he only has 3 home runs, and his average might be, I think it might be below 200 or maybe low 200s. They have to get better. Like, they have to come up a little bit towards their averages. But that's been the biggest difference from what I've seen between those two franchises, those two teams on the field this year.
I mean, most of the stuff for the Braves, you look at the top of the leaderboard, it's mostly Ozuna, which is like,
yeah,
like you're looking at some of the players that you would expect to be up there. The, you know, the Austin Rileys, like the Matt Olsons, as you expected, the Acuña, like these players are not up in the leaderboard. And you'd imagine come middle of the season, we're looking in August that these two teams are going to be in a dogfight for the NL East. And luckily for everybody, there's an extra playoff spot. So we're going to get to see all these teams battle it out. And you're not to worry about one team being left out, because I think as much as people didn't like that extra playoff spot, we're getting better baseball because of it.
Yeah, maybe the Braves just don't want the layoff. Maybe they'd rather be a wild card team this year.
We shall see. But we also have the teams we really haven't discussed a lot here. So I want to put some love or lack thereof on the Toronto Blue Jays. And I want to talk about some bright spots. Of course, you can look at Jose Barrios, who, you know, got beat up today. I mean, his ERA popped up, but as of record time prior to this, we were getting ready to wax poetic about what he's been doing. Got absolutely demolished tonight. But as far as, I mean, my concern for the Blue Jays, and just looking at it through the lens, like I've been watching them pretty closely because I have Bo Bichette on my team fantasy wise. Yeah. So I'm watching them pretty closely. This team is inept offensively right now. They're sitting 23rd in batting average, 25th in runs. They are just not scoring runs at a high clip. Everyone's having, you know, we just talked about Alec Boehm, right, being 32 RBIs. Dalton Varsho has 16 RBIs for the Jays, and that's their league leader. 6 home runs for Varsho. I mean, we have single digits for guys like Vlad, and also Bo Bichette. Does he even have a home run this year? I'm looking at his numbers right now quick. He has one home run on the year. Like, this is not what we're looking for with a team that's pretty for the Jays, where you expect every year they're going to come out and at least have a tangible offense. Pitching was the issue. It's things have flipped on its head right now.
Yeah, I think they're a franchise where the best thing for them would be to continue losing. And I will say that because I think it's time to break this core up. I think it's every year, many of us, including myself, are fooled by the names on the papers. And we're like, oh, this team should win this division. Like, the offense should be good. The pitching should be good. The bullpen should be decent. And these guys underperform. And maybe underperform is the wrong word now. I think we can start to say pretty confidently that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is not the guy we thought he was. He's just seemingly getting worse by the year. And I think we maybe are close to being able to say that about Bo Bichette as well. Now, I'm not going to put it just on the two of them. I don't think the coach or the manager does a very good job. I don't know. When I watch them, I'm just uninspired, disappointed every time. When I look at their record, same feeling. I think if they come back and start winning a little bit, you're going to start to be fooled again as a franchise. Like, all right, here we go. And they're going to flame out, either just miss the playoffs or make it and get eliminated pretty quickly. I think the best thing for them would be to lose, so they have an easier decision to make of, we got to change something. We got to make some big moves. Maybe not completely start over, because kind of like we said about the Marlins before, like, some of their team is pretty young, but some of the older veteran pieces, let's see what we can get for them. Like, I'm sure there'll be a team that wants a guy like Kevin Gausman or Chris Bassett to come help. And we'll give you some young pieces that can come help you. I don't know. It's just not working. I don't know if some of those guys like Bichette or Guerrero could benefit from a change of scenery, but like, they're just not who we thought they were going to be. We thought those two were superstars, and they're not even close to that level. Not even close.
Yeah, and of course, offense is down all across the board, but this is staggering at this point. You can watch the line graph fall off as far as production goes. And we reference Jose Barrios, and he had a going into tonight a 1.44 ERA, and he gave up 8 earned runs tonight, and now he's sitting at 2.85. But just for perspective of how bad the pitching has been outside of Barrios, they sit 23rd in ERA in all the leagues. So you're leading the charge, the ace of your staff, going out there and doing his job. Everything underneath has been just horrendous. You talked about Chris Bassett, 5.45. Like, everything that could go wrong has gone wrong there. They're sitting at 16-20, and let's be honest, they're lucky to be there, because looking at those numbers, they easily could be sitting at much worse than that. So we shall see what happens. I mean, there's something to be said about the ball being manipulated. I don't want to get into a further conversation about it, because there is something to be said about offense being down all across the board. But this is not just a ball issue with Toronto. This is a production issue across everywhere, because teams have no problem scoring runs against them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's the thing. I agree. And that'll probably be a topic we're eventually going to have a longer segment on, because I think clearly there's some truth to something's going on there with the ball. But yeah, the Blue Jays, it's not just this year. That's why it's kind of a bigger thing. Like,
right,
this has been going on. They've just underperformed, even in their better seasons. Like, it ends kind of on a whimper.
Kind of like their counterpart in hockey with the Toronto Maple Leafs. So,
yeah.
Yeah. It will never get old watching those guys get eliminated. But we'll stick with baseball here. The Seattle Mariners right now, we don't really talk about them a lot, but looking at some of their numbers sitting at right now, I believe they got the win tonight, or let me just take a look quick of their score. Oh, they're tied right now against the Twins, but right now sitting at 19-16, second in the AL West. Offensively, not great, but pitching-wise, have been really good. Right now, second in ERA, first in WHIP. You know, Logan Gilbert out there doing his thing. Luis Castillo, not bad. Bryce Miller going out there and doing his thing. Mm-hmm. 56 Ks from Luis Castillo, so he's doing his thing on his end. George Kirby, I believe they're going to get Brian Wu back, so they're looking to batten down the hatches here, and I kind of like what I've seen from Seattle here early in the season.
Yeah, I do too. I was disappointed with how they started, but the pitching has kind of righted the ship a little bit. Luis Castillo was not very good in his first few starts, and he's kind of looked much more like himself recently. Logan Gilbert, I would say, is probably the ace there. He's a top 10 guy right now in ERA. Listen, the offense, like you mentioned, they strike out so much. They don't have a bunch of terrible offensive players, but anytime you have a team like that, that as a team strikes out a ton, they're going to be streaky. They're going to be very, very streaky. But to have such depth in starting pitching can sometimes keep you afloat. That the AL West, man, like, it is up for grabs right now. The Rangers have not necessarily played up to their capability. We have already talked about the Astros and how disappointing they've been. Like, Seattle can take this. I hope they don't fall into that Toronto territory of a team that we always think is going to be there and take the next step and doesn't, because at times they've also felt like that. But they're playing well right now. I like the team. I think they're a very likable team. Hopefully Jerry Dipoto doesn't, you know, maybe it's time to keep his hands off a little bit and just let the team sit and actually see what you have. He's one of those guys that almost like a fantasy manager that just wants to make a trade or, you know, make an ad drop. Like, just, you guys are pretty good. Like, the roster is pretty solid. Like, let's just see what you have in the clubhouse.
With that being said, let's get away from the meat of the order and get to our take a pitch, swing away segment, buy or sell, with our three topics. All right, for take a pitch or swing away, buy or sell, which we have three topics to discuss. We're going to start with Corbin Carroll, and the topic of conversation veers towards he's coming out of it. So he has at least one hit in six of his last seven games. He homered tonight, opposite field off a lefty, five RBIs tonight. He's increased his average from 189 to 203 in that time. And overall, he's hitting 203, one homer, seven RBIs, and slugging just a very minuscule 250. Corbin Carroll's been struggling all year. Looks very good tonight as far as just like seeing him on paper, the filling up the stat line, which we haven't seen a lot from him. Your thoughts on this? Do you feel like he's fully coming out of it and we're going to get the Corbin Carroll that we know and love?
I think it's too early. I think the stats are so jarring, especially the advanced stats. They're so jarring that it's too early to say for sure he's coming out of it. But tonight was a big step, because before tonight, I had written there that he had like hits, had at least one hit in five out of his last six games, but they were pretty much all singles, one double. For him to have that homer tonight to the opposite field against a lefty and five RBIs, that is a big deal. I had tweeted the other night the video clip that's kind of been going around a lot lately, a lot of people trying to explain his struggles. If you don't remember, last year in, I think it was July, against the Mets, actually, Carroll took a swing and immediately grabbed his right shoulder. And he has a history with that shoulder. Tore his labrum, I think, back in 2021, needed pretty major surgery. So there's a history there. And just a few days before that swing, he had left a game with shoulder soreness. So something was happening there. Now, when that happened last year, I remember watching it on MLB Network, MLB Tonight, and I think we're all talking in the fantasy chat like, holy crap, Corbin Carroll's season's done. And he was in the middle of an unbelievable season, and it looked like that was it. And then he was in the lineup the next day. Like, wait, what? And listen, from that point on, he was still pretty good, but not, if you really dig into it, the power was down from where it was before that swing. So I had tweeted this out and said, this video has been swirling around a lot lately. Talked about the labrum surgery. At that time, his slugging percentage was 246. It's a little up now, thankfully, to recent stuff. Another jarring advanced stat is the home run per fly ball. It's 2.8%. And this is as of a few days ago when I tweeted this. It was 15.4% last year. That is an incredible difference for a young guy from one year to the next. And here's the thing. His K percentage is lower than it's ever been. So you can't say, oh, he's starting to just swing and miss too much. He's uppercutting too much. No, not really. He's still making contact. To me, all this adds up to showing that it's some kind of strength issue. Like, I don't necessarily think it's the swing or the mechanics necessarily. Something's going on with the shoulder strength. Now, I still partly believe that. If he starts hitting a significant more home runs in the next few weeks, I might start changing my tune a little bit. And I hope I'm wrong, because I think if that's the case, like, eventually push is going to come to shove and he's going to need to do something. But so the answer to this one is I'll try to be optimistic here, and I'm going to buy it. I'm going to swing away, especially because of tonight, but mostly just because I want him to be okay.
I'm taking the pitch here. I don't buy it quite yet. And again, on my fantasy team, been watching very closely, very worried about what we're seeing here. You mentioned just the surface level, the stats you're looking at, just the baseline and box score watching every single night.
Yeah.
But the advanced stats are what really bother me here. Just the drop off that we've seen. And it has to be, like you said, I feel like it's injury related or just fatigue in that arm. We saw it with Tatis, who had an issue with the same shoulder situation where he was not able to put a lot of power behind the swing. And again, I don't want to be the conspiracy theorist tinfoil hat, but feels like this is the same story with a lot of these star players. There's something going on with the ball, that any ball that was a deep fly ball or would usually go out of the ballpark, but now it's dying in the middle of the outfield. Why? Because I think this is an epidemic in all of baseball. Like, is it a coincidence that pretty much, I mean, we're looking at not even just a handful of stars that are struggling to start the year as far as power goes. We're looking at upwards of two dozen at as far as power goes. We have a power outage in baseball. Can they stop fucking with the balls? Stop changing what the balls are to manipulate what you want of them. Because what's going to happen mid-year, Devin, you know this is going to happen. They're going to manipulate the ball, and we're going to get a spike and surge to write these numbers, and we're going to be sitting at ridiculous numbers through June, July, August, where the home run is going to be out of control, and that's what's going to affect the pennant race like we saw in 2017.
Yeah, and it kind of sucks as a fan. Like, we just want to know who these players really are. Like, are they this year's player? Are they last year's player? Most likely they're somewhere in between that. Like, is Ronald Acuña really a 40 home run, 70 stolen base guy, or is he more like a 30 home run, 70 stolen base guy? I don't know. Like you said, the prestige of the players that are struggling, like, it is not your, you know, middle of the road guys. It is some of the best of the best. And it's very strange.
So our second topic here, of the 9 sub under 2 ERA starting pitchers after Zach Wheeler, Tarik Skubal is the most likely to sustain this fantastic start. So others in this category include Cutter Crawford, Seth Lugo, Javier Assad, Logan Gilbert, Ranger Suarez, Jordan Hicks, and Shota Imanaga and Taylor Hawk. So we had Jose Barrios in here before his 8-run shelling that he took earlier tonight. But your thoughts on, is Tarik Skubal the most believable out of this category? Is there someone else you're buying in here?
Well, I just noticed Imanaga had to throw in there late. I don't know how I missed him before, but I think the easy answer would be to say Imanaga, but we also have to remember he's technically still, he's a rookie here. And like I've said many times before, all it takes is for one team to kind of figure you out a little bit. And then you, all of a sudden everyone else is getting that same video. Like, there's no secrets anymore. Everyone's going to see it. Everyone's going to watch tape and see, oh, he does this. He tips his pitches here. He does that. Or, you know, you attack him on this pitch. He puts a fastball over, in this count, too often. Someone's going to find something eventually, and we'll see what happens there. Like, he's not going to sustain this, fully. So I wouldn't be shocked to see him get blown up a couple of times in a row at some point. So I'm going to buy this. I'm going to swing away. I think Tarik Skubal, I mean, maybe best lefty in the game right now, at least top two, top three. I think he's for real. I think he pitches in the right park to keep a low ERA as well in Detroit. So I'm swinging away. I believe in Skubal 100%.
I believe in Skubal as well. I'm taking the pitch, though, because I think Cutter Crawford right now on that list is the most believable out of the guys. And he came out tonight. He gave up 2 runs, but he still looked pretty dominant. I love what we're seeing from Crawford as a right-hander in Fenway Park. He is a guy who is as advertised. I like that he's not walking as many guys. I think he has the stuff of an ace, and I believe that he'll be around the under 2 ERA pace that we're seeing here, and I think he's going to keep the Red Sox in the race, and he's making a believer out of me as far as being a top of the rotation pitcher.
I'm surprised by the Cutter pick, but I'm maybe more surprised that you didn't go with your boy Logan Gilbert. I know you feel strongly about him.
Dude, I like Logan Gilbert because the comps are there, but I've seen what it looks like when it goes poorly for him, and there's a domino effect for Logan Gilbert that I'm almost awaiting down the line.
Interesting. Okay.
So our third topic here, Pete Alonso is not worth $30 million per year. So I'll let you go through all the other stuff that's in here. You put a lot of information.
Yeah.
Pete Alonso has been a lightning rod of conversation on sports radio and beyond. You mentioned on our Twitter account, people are talking about maybe moving on for Pete Alonso if you're not going to re-sign him. But let's lay this out for everybody.
All right. So first of all, I'll say I was thinking about this recently. It specifically came to my mind last night when he sat for the first time all season. I mean, he had started game streak going back to last year. That was pretty long. I don't know the exact number. So it was interesting to see that. And I started thinking and looking at the numbers. He's been mired in a 2 for his last 36 at-bats slump before tonight. Did hit a home run tonight, which is nice to see. The Mets offense clicking a little bit tonight against the Cardinals. So Ken Rosenthal put out an article, actually, I think today, interestingly enough, on The Athletic. It's a really good article, basically titled something along the lines of, I have it right here, The Dynamic of Pete Alonso's Pending Free Agency. The dynamics of Pete Alonso's free agency are fascinating, and they really are. The number that's been tossed around a lot, whether it be on sports radio or you know, other circles for Pete is $30 million a year. And at first, like, I didn't really blink an eye at that. It's, you know, money is just thrown around like crazy now in majors. But the more I look at it, I can't buy this. I can't. Even as a big Mets fan, I love Pete Alonso. What's not to like about him as far as a person and a player? I can't buy it. I looked at the position players who are currently making $30 million this year or more, specifically this year for AAV, not necessarily the life of the contract. Aaron Judge, Anthony Rendon, funny enough, Mike Trout, Corey Seager, Nolan Arenado, Francisco Lindor, Carlos Correa, Giancarlo Stanton, Jose Altuve, Juan Soto, Alex Bregman, Mookie Betts, and Shohei Ohtani. That's the list for position players this year making $30 million or more. I'm sorry, yeah, but that Pete Alonso does not belong in that list. I mean, neither does Anthony Rendon. But, like, pick out the guys in that list that actually deserve to make that money. I don't think Pete is the same caliber of player, and I think it would be easy to prove if we looked at all the stats and the advanced stats and defensive metrics and all those things. But even by the eye test, I think we can be fair and say that. The other thing that's going against him here is first base contracts have taken a big hit in recent years. Front offices kind of have argued that it's just not a majorly important defensive position. Now, I'm sure many baseball players would dispute that. Pete actually, in an interview the other day, made some good points where he disputed it, saying how many plays the first baseman is involved in, whether it be a cutoff or, you know, holding a man on first. Like, he made some good points. But as a whole, front offices have kind of gotten together and driven the prices of first baseman down a little bit. And you can look no further than Matt Olson, Freddie Freeman. Freddie Freeman, I believe his contract comes out to around $26, $27 million a year. Yes, he's older than Pete, but, like, Freddie Freeman is Freddie Freeman. Like, he's an MVP caliber player. Matt Olson, I know he's playing poorly, as we mentioned, this year. 1 year older than Pete. He's 30, as Pete's just 29. I think he's making $21 million a year. I think most people would say Matt Olson is probably a bit superior to Pete Alonso as an all-around player. So a lot of arguments that are very easy to poke a hole in that $30 million number. Rosenthal stated in his article, the Mets may not see him as worth more than the $162 million that the Dodgers gave Freddie Freeman. I think that's perfectly fair. I mean, it's not easy to argue that. I guess age is the one thing people might point to. His agent, Scott Boras, who he's sticking with, will also be representing Juan Soto, Alex Bregman, Corbin Burns, potentially Blake Snell again if he opts out. Bellinger, Chapman, Matt Chapman, Reese Hoskins, they could all opt out and go back into free agency again. So he's going to be busy. The monster deals for first baseman that we used to see, think of Prince Fielder, Pujols to the Angels, even Joey Votto. None of those deals aged very well. Even Miguel Cabrera, you could point to, you know, obviously Hall of Famer, but, like, what were we getting towards the end there? So I think all these things go against him. Now, if you don't want to look at all that stuff and you just want to look at his performance on the field, he hit 217 last year. Yes, he's pretty much always going to hit his home runs. If you are just worried about the home runs and you don't care about his average, I can't argue against that because he's pretty much always going to hit at least 40 home runs, even when he hits poorly for the year. He proved that last year. Here's a bigger problem. He's hitting 138 with runners in scoring position this year. Like, the clutch factor, we need that. He's hitting 205 this year before tonight. I said a few weeks ago, if we get another 220 year from Pete Alonso, like, we can't pay him a ton of money. And we're getting less than that right now, early in the season, obviously. A couple of advanced stats for you. His exit velocity, his hard hit percentage, and his barrel percentage, they're easily the lowest of his career. Easily. Like, some of them drastically lower than other years so far. The pros. All right, so let's look at the positives. Are obviously his power. His power is elite, the elite of the elite. And he's never missed more than 10 games in a season. So durability is great. Fantastic. To me, just eye test, at times he no longer looks like the guy that is capable of hitting those 53 home runs that he did in his rookie year because he chases too many pitches. He doesn't take enough bad pitches. And pitchers know that. Like, I see him lunge after these bad breaking balls constantly, especially when he's in a funk. He also hit as high as 271 1 year. I don't see that ever happening again unless something drastic changes. He used to be this line drive, opposite field, up the middle guy. There's too many times now it just looks like he's trying to pull everything down the line. And that's what I worry about with him. Reasonable estimates, if you look at a few different articles, there's one great pitcher list one, and they take everything into account, whether it be a comp or the advanced stats. They came up with 3 years, $75 million, or because Boris probably would not take 3 years, although he took some short deals this year, 6 years, $150 million, probably with some incentives, which comes about, you know, $25 million a year. As a fan, I would take that. But if I see a deal for him $30 million a year over, I'm going to worry that the Mets are paying him for what he already did and not for what he's going to do.
Well, that's the mindset that it used to be. You mentioned the contracts for Fielder, Pujols, Joey Votto, et cetera, where everyone just accepts that you're paying for the star in the immediate and you have to suck it up for 6-7 years. That's what it is, and that's what it's been. But baseball executives, we mentioned, you know, the guy from the Marlins from earlier tonight, it's a different mindset now. There's no loyalty for these players of what they've done. They're looking at it from a lens of what we're going to get down the line and maximizing the AAV for these guys. Like, you want to make sure that the salary matches what you're building, and you don't want to be weighed down by an albatross of a contract that potentially Pete Alonso has the makings of being. I mean, we all know, we can see the writing on the wall. This contract will not age well. Are you willing to eat that? Are you going to be in a situation 5-6 years from now where he is predominantly a DH, predominantly in the lineup just for his power, and he's not even doing that, and then eventually get to buy him out? I mean, we all know that. So in the immediate, if he's willing to take a deal comparable to Freddie Freeman or comparable to some of these team-friendly deals to stay in New York, because at the end of the day, New York has some leverage here. The Mets have leverage to keep him here because, you know, he can go off and get his money. I'm not sure what market's out there that will pay him, but I'm sure someone will pay him a little more than the Mets are willing to pay. But the ideal placement for him and his star that he wants to stay and become is the New York Mets in this market. Like, at the end of the day, there's a value of playing here with the Mets, and you don't have to overpay, because some of that stuff we're seeing, if he's going to hit 53 home runs a year, awesome. But I mean, you can find some of the production we're seeing, especially now for this season, you can find that in AAA and bring it up to your major leagues. You don't have to pay $30 million a year for it. You can find a more sustainable, more efficient amount of offense somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, you see some of his numbers and they're incredible from over the years. Like the 53 home runs in his rookie year, that's unbelievable. I think he hit 260 that year. That's what an unbelievable rookie season. That's crazy. And that's 2019.
But he should have renegotiated after that year. Similar to some of these younger players. You know what I mean? Like, you should find a way to lock in. But he didn't want to, because that's not where it was when he was doing that. But you look at, you know, players for the Braves, it's their model. Even, you know, the Astros do the same thing where they find a guy, lock him up, and you pay him for what you think he's going to do, rather than the model of you get to the contract year and then negotiate thinking what you did 5 years prior has any bearing on what you're going to be doing in the future. And that's just not the way baseball teams look at anymore. Good or bad, that's how it is now with the executives.
Yeah, I mean, there's another year he had 131 RBIs. Like, those are, like, crazy elite numbers.
Insane, yeah.
But, like, these last 2 years, or this last year and now 2 months, have been a little, you know, cause for concern here of what this guy, how he's going to age. I love the guy, and most Met fans love him, but I don't think this is going to be the case. And Ken Rosenthal said this too. Like, if you remember the Edwin Diaz situation, they let him get to after the season before they tried it. And then they went right out and gave him a record deal for a closer. Like, they did not hesitate, and it was done. I don't think the Mets are going to be that aggressive here when this ends, because I think, like you said, Cohen knows he has some leverage. I think all these other teams are also going to see all the holes that we just pointed out.
Yeah.
And, I don't see, yes, all it takes is one GM that is just fascinated with a guy, or sees like money signs if they think Pete Alonso is going to chase 500 home runs in their uniform down the road. But like, you already have Lindor on the books for $34 million a year. You have Diaz, which is a big contract for a closer. Like, you got to be careful here, even though it's Steve Cohen. And the other point that Rosenthal brought up is like, say that Cohen thinks he has a shot at both Soto and Corbin Burns. That's a long shot, right? But say he thinks he has a shot. You think he's talking to Pete Alonso before he talks to those two guys?
Right.
So I have to sell it. $30 million a year, I don't think so. I still would like to see him in a Met uniform. I think it has to be for the right number, though.
Well, if you have the crystal ball and can predict he's going to hit 53 home runs and have 131 RBIs in 2028, sure, sign me up, $30 million a year, but unfortunately, we see what happens with these deals as they age, and I don't think teams want to get into bed with those types of deals, and I think we're seeing it. We see a lot of lofty free agents sit on the sidelines for a bit. He may be doing that you know, if he starts to hold out and Scott Boras is trying to get the best deal, we may not see him have a team come spring training next year, because I you're going to hold them over the fire. And there's players that will produce for league minimum now at this point. We're seeing guys produce that come up from AAA, and it may not have the star power, but I think teams are looking for the Pete Alonzos that were. That year he hit 53 home runs. Guess what? They're looking for the next guy to do that.
Yeah, and if you're a Met fan listening to this, like, come on. Like, we can't picture him not in a Met uniform. Listen, man, Freddie Freeman was, we thought, a lifetime Brave. And they let him walk. Wasn't that after they won the World Series, too?
Yep.
I mean, so if that can happen, anything can happen.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens. But I think he probably would have been better off negotiating last offseason or during this season. Because I think as time goes on, especially, I mean, the offensive numbers are not, if we'd expect they're going to be there. Come the end of the year, we expect that the numbers are going to be there. But you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself right now as you're not the same player you were. You're building the case against yourself at this point to get paid.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be pressing at least a little bit.
All right, well, let's get to our next segment, Just a Bit Outside.
Vaughn into the windup in his first offering. Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed. Ball four. Ball eight. Low, and Vaughn has walked the bases loaded on 12 straight pitches.
All right, so Just a Bit Outside. We don't do this segment every week, only when it catches your eye. And I believe it was Thursday I sent this to you and said, well, we already have our Just a Bit Outside segment to talk about. Without further ado, let's get into it. We have Stephen A. Smith doing what he does really horribly, and that's talking baseball. So let's head in to see what Stephen A. Smith had to say about Mike Trout.
Mike Trout is a sensational player when he's healthy. One of the greatest. He really, really is. And I'm a huge, huge fan. But I've grown disgusted with his lack of availability. It makes me question. I know he looks the part. What the hell are you doing to take care of yourself? Always injured. I mean, damn, it's baseball. I mean, what are we talking about here? It's not football. It's not boxing. It's not the UFC. You're not running up and down the court 94 feet basketball for 82 nights a year. It's baseball. Half the time, y'all out standing out in the outfield, you know, chewing on pumpkin seeds or something, waiting for a fly ball to come your way. How the hell is he always hurt? I don't understand this.
He is always hurt.
It drives me nuts when I see baseball players getting hurt. What is it that you're doing with yourself physically that you can't stay healthy?
I mean, where to even start with that? What a dumbass take about talking about injuries in baseball and comparing it to other sports. I mean, first of all, his takes in all aspects. I mean, if you can even focus on, you know, what's going on in New York nowadays with the Knicks, and he's supposedly on ESPN, the spokesperson for the Knicks, but he always has the worst takes on the Knicks. This feels like, to me, shock jock level daytime sports radio type of talk. At the very least, to say Mike Trout is being irresponsible for being hurt and then taking it out on baseball where they're saying you're standing around. Like, what year is this that we're having this conversation?
It's just a non-baseball fan trying to, you know, talk about baseball, basically. Anyone that's played baseball or watched enough baseball knows, like, the tough part about baseball is that you do go from kind of standing to then going full speed. That leads to lots of soft tissue kind of injuries, things like that. Like, injuries happen. I'm as frustrated as anybody with Mike Trout's recent injury history because I like watching him play. But to kind of allude to thinking that maybe he doesn't take care of his body during the offseason is insane. Stephen A. Smith is the same guy that last year, when asked if he thought Shohei Ohtani could be the face of the league, he said no because he doesn't really speak the language. Like, it's just a joke. It's more of the same from him. Baseball is just one sport he shouldn't talk about. Like, at least some of the other sports where he makes crazy takes, you can tell he actually, like, watches the games night by night. He should leave this one. Leave this one out. Leave it to some of the other guys on that network.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you know, you had Mad Dog on the other side of him sitting next to him, not correcting him, was, to me, jarring, because I feel like this is something Mad Dog in his prime would have jumped down his throat, but he didn't. And at this point, it's just like, I don't know how I can even respect if he's talking about baseball. And, you know, it's similar to when ESPN, before, you know, they started having the playoffs for hockey and they were talking about hockey, that you're no business to talk hockey. So why are we having Stephen A. Smith talk about baseball when, let's be honest, you haven't seen more than 10% of Mike Trout's at bats in his career? I mean, that's being generous, right, too.
Yeah. Listen, when we created this segment, we knew it was only a matter of time before we had a Stephen A. Smith take, and I'm surprised it took this long.
All right. Well, let's get to an honor of Mr. Rose and talk about our bets from last week and put our parlays in.
That's Pete Rose! Pete Rose just got tombstone! Pete Rose just got tombstone! And this crowd in Boston loved it!
All right, here we are talking about our bets. And then, Devin, let's go with your bets from last week and how you did.
Not very good. Not a good week. To remind you, I had a three-game parlay. I picked the Orioles spread, -1.5 versus the Yankees. Corbin Burns on the mound. That was +130. The Yanks won that game 2-0, so didn't really come close to that leg. The one leg that I did get correct was Cubs money line versus the Mets with Shota Imanaga on the mound. The Cubs ended up winning 1-0. I believe that was the controversial game with Pete Alonso getting thrown out at home with the catcher maybe or maybe not blocking the plate keep the game 1-0. So I got that one correct, barely. And then the other one I got wrong, and I barely got this one wrong. I got a little greedy here. I took the Phillies spread instead of just taking the money line, -1.5 versus the Angels with Zach Wheeler on the mound. I think it was the day or 2 days after the Trout injury, so I thought it was a good time. The Phillies won, but 2-1, so they didn't cover the 1.5.
So for mine for last week, I had the Orioles money line versus the Yankees on Thursday, which they wound up getting the win there. And the Giants money line versus the Red Sox, they got the win there. And finishing it off with Mitchell Parker getting over 5.5 Ks versus the Rangers and just barely miss. He ended up with 5 Ks on the night. So I miss. I mean, 2 out of 3, you don't get it. But I feel like I'm getting more in rhythm with figuring it out. So maybe this week will be the week I hit the full parlay.
Damn close, though, man. Pretty close. This week, I'm going to be a little less risky. I'm only going to go 2 legs here. This is a Wednesday night 2-leg parlay. So if you're listening Wednesday morning, get it in for tonight. I have the Orioles money line over the Nationals. It's Kyle Bradish versus Mitchell Parker. I have that parlayed with a Carlos Rodon to record a win over the Astros. So I'm not taking the Yanks money line. Instead, I'll take one that'll get the odds up a little bit for this 2-leg parlay. Carlos Rodon to record a win. So that I believe would take the parlay to maybe like +200-ish or something along those lines. I don't have the exact number. Hasn't come out yet, but I'll go with that for this week.
So for me this week, I'm looking at Thursday's slate of games. I have the Giants over the Rockies money line, the Mariners over the Twins money line, continuing that with the Royals over the Angels on money line, and I'm taking 2-player spot specials with the strikeout props, Hunter Green over 5.5 Ks, and Logan Gilbert over 6.5 Ks. So that's going to be pretty hefty there. If you drop $10, I believe you can win up to 75. So I think it's +750 we're looking at.
Nice.
On this, so a decent run here. So put that in if you're looking on Thursday. But if you want to keep your money, don't put it in, because I haven't really worked out the kinks yet as far as hitting these parlays. But if you want to put $5 in, and we'll hit together, and we'll celebrate next week on episode 9.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
All right. Well, let's get to our last segment here, a minor issue, and talk about what's going down at the farm. All right, as you guys know, a quick note on an exciting prospect in this segment. So, Devin, I'll let you take the lead. This is happening down in the Mets minor league system for a player that everybody's really excited about.
All right, so last year the Mets, when they kind of punted the season, they made a trade for, they traded away Max Scherzer, and most Mets fans were very excited about the return, and that was Luis Angel Acuña, Ronald Acuña's younger brother. Acuña is now 22 years old. He's down in AAA, started in AAA, so on the fringe of the Major League team. The reason I chose him today for this one is because there's been a lot of chatter recently among Mets fans and other circles that Jeff McNeil's time as the starting second baseman needs to come to an end. And I will say I almost back up that sentiment. I'm maybe not 100% there yet, but here's the thing. When McNeil was at his best, he was hitting for high average. He seemed to put the bat on the ball in big situations and come up clutch. He's one guy that I'm not sure. Maybe the ban of the shift is actually hurt. I don't know. I just feel like it's been a long time since we've watched him and he's looked really good. And if he's not over a 300 hitter or at least close, what is he really giving you? Like, he's not exceptional at really anything else. You know, he's not super fast. He doesn't have a ton of power. He's an okay defender, and he can play multiple positions. I'll give him that. But other than that, I do think it's getting close to a time for a change. But here's the problem.
Before you get to Luis Angel Acuna, I heard Evan Roberts talking about this, and he's been a defender of Jeff McNeil. He finally has had it up to here with him, and he was going off about saying that he is just pretty much useless, kind of echoing what you're saying as well. But if Evan Roberts is out on WFAN on Jeff McNeil, I feel like it's pretty much over. His time in Queens seems like it's coming to an end.
Well, here's the numbers. So this was before tonight. And again, the Mets had a pretty good offensive night tonight, so this might have improved slightly. But he's currently hitting .231, one homer, seven RBIs, two stolen bases. On-base percentage is .311. K percentage is only 12.5%. He's not going to kill you with strikeouts. Walk percentage is 8.8%, and that's fine, not terrible. This is the one that jumped out at me. His barrel percentage is only 1%. Only barrels up the ball 1% of the time. That's the third lowest in the league. Only Mason Wynn and Nico Horner are lower. Mason Wynn was actually at 0% barrel percentage, which is crazy because he's actually had a nice rookie season. Anyway, here's the problem, though. Luis Angel Acuna does not quite look ready to come up here. You don't want to call a kid up like that at 22 years old when he's not really playing all that well down in AAA. So he's currently hitting .215 in AAA, two home runs, 18 RBIs, nine stolen bases. Speed is a big part of his game. So that would be an exciting piece. And I think he's got a pretty good glove, too. He's got three triples, so there's that speed again. This is his first year in AAA, so only like a month under his belt of AAA baseball. His K percentage is only 19.4%. Now, obviously, that's higher than McNeil, but 19.4% for a young kid, that's pretty good nowadays. I feel like all these prospects, even the top ones, are all around 30%. So 19.4% doesn't kill you. His walk percentage is only 5.4%. I would like to see that go up a little bit before we call him up. Make sure he has more of a discerning eye, gets on base in different types of ways. On base percentage is only 264. That's not going to play. That is not going to play in the bigs right now. He's got to get on base more than that. I will say he was well over 300 last year. So maybe the AA to AAA, it's going to take a little while to get used to that. So the whole point, another option at second base as far as down on the farm is Jet Williams. Big-time prospect, only 20 years old, and he's hurt right now. So he's barely played. He's got some right wrist stuff going on, hoping to get back soon. But all this to say, Luis Angel Acuna is an exciting prospect for sure. But the call for him right now, I do not believe is the right call. I think you got to let McNeil stay there for a little bit and hold down the fort and hope it's okay. And then if Acuna gets hot, bring him on up.
And this is what we're talking about before, where the Marlins are breaking it down. You can do things in motion where the Mets noticed they were out of things. So they sold off Scherzer, sold off a piece that they weren't going to keep, and they figured out a way to add on. And then this is a kid you can be excited for without breaking it down and being competitive. So this is a way to kind of check both boxes on the rebuild instead of just tearing the house down and building it up, and you have no place to sleep while it's raining outside. But let's get to our coming around third as we wrap up this podcast here and give us what we're looking forward to next week and do some shilling for the show. All right, as we say goodbye for a Tuesday evening here, we're going to be talking about what we'll be keeping our eye on for the rest of the week. So I'm going to start here talking about the Phillies, and we talk about how well they're playing. Right now they've won four straight without Trey Turner, but since he's been out and he's going to be out a significant amount of time, what will the offense be down the line? And, you know, we can talk about how great Alec Bohm's been. We can talk about the whole lineup down and look at the contribution for everybody. But no one's been more important, in my opinion, than Trey Turner, of why the Phillies lead the league in wins right now. So there's no easy way to replace the production from him. And you can hope that the strain is minor enough that it's not going to be something that peaks its head throughout the whole year, because that's the other conversation people aren't having. Trey Turner, he may come back, but this may be a lurking issue all year that never quite heals unless you have 4 months off. So in Turner's absence, I think Sosa's getting the playing time at shortstop. We got Clemens coming up, as I mentioned, to step into Sosa's versatile role. So as a utility man back and forth, they're going to probably use Bryson Stott at shortstop as well. They'll figure out a way to hold it down, but I'm looking forward to watching what the Phillies do and can they hold it together? Cause it's the first real test they have to go past some of this adversity that's coming their way that inevitably every team, every competitive World Series contender team, is going to have to face. And this is the first big one.
Yeah. And if you're the Phillies, if you know you're going to get him back later in the year, you'd rather have him out now when you're hot and the rest of the guys are playing really well than later when, you know, other guys are slumping. So, you know, it's tough not to believe in the Phillies. And As far as what I'm watching here, a couple things. Corbin Carroll, we talked about him. I'm going to be keeping an eye on him to see if the breakout is here, if we're finally going to get a little more of the Corbin Carroll that we know. Maybe tonight was the start of that. I'm also going to be keeping an eye on the Mets-Braves series. The Mets took 2 out of 3 last time in Atlanta. It was kind of shocking that that happened. So second time they've played them, Braves reeling a little bit after that Dodgers sweep. I think Christian Scott, another young Mets kid, he looked great against the Rays. Not just pitching-wise, but he looked comfortable. Like, just watching the facial expressions, he looked like he belonged there. If his second start ends up being against the Braves, that's a hell of a second start to have. So my eyes will be glued to the TV for his second start.
So that's all we got for you guys. I really appreciate you listening. Again, if you want to support the show, please go to @TableSettersPod on IG. Also interact with us on the X Machine, aka Twitter, @TableSettersPod as well. Leave a review, 5 stars, tell a friend about it, start the conversation about baseball. Let's get it going, guys. We are over 100 followers, as we mentioned. We're sitting at episode 8. We're looking to continue this ride throughout this whole season and beyond to cover you guys from wall to wall with all the baseball you need. So if you like what you're listening to, again, you can support by doing that, leaving a review, telling somebody, and also engaging us on Instagram. We'll be back next week for episode 9 of Table Setters, breaking down all the action in Major League Baseball. Until then, we'll talk to you after a while.
That has been so improbable, the impossible has happened. This one by Matt.